Bitcoin. Fix the money, fix the world.
This is the Bugle Weekly Podcast on Fountain
FM.
The number one bull market Bitcoin podcast.
The hottest news stories of the week.
All the best bangers from Bugle music.
And so much more. The Bugle does the thinking, so you don't have to. So sit back, smoke a cigarette, and enjoy this week's episode.
Welcome to this edition of the Bugle Weekly. Man, things are getting interesting. There's a lot of NGU, but there's also a lot of compliance. We're in the midst of a bull market, and everybody is scrambling to figure out where they stand, how to profit, maximize their position in the market right now. How are you doing today, Rod? What's your macro outlook on the influencing culture and the Bitcoin journalism out there?
Blah. The best way to start your morning or a podcast episode, a Bitcoin podcast episode, is some really good, strong ammonia smelling salts. Let me get one more. I did get it. Anyways, it really clears your mind, really helps you focus. And I think that's really important. I think that Bitcoin podcasters do not necessarily take their role in the coming, the coming hyper Bitcoinization seriously enough. Hey, influencers and Bitcoin podcasters are the new first responders. If you guys remember 9/11, after 9/11, if you were a cop, firefighter, a military recruiter, people really respected you. Like, all the teenagers would go to the mall, they'd get Sbarro pizza, and they'd buy some gifts from Spencer Gifts, and then they would go and hang out with the Marine recruiters and the military recruiters at the mall recruiting station. And that was really a good influence on kids back then. This is because people respected first responders. And influencers are now the first responders. Bitcoin podcasters are the first responders. When news happens, influencers are the first to respond. And it's a very challenging, very difficult, it's a very environment to navigate right now. There's just so much news happening, and you don't know if it's based or if it's cringe. And as a first responder, if you respond to something and say that it's cringe when it's really based, or say that it's based when it's really cringe, you can really have your credibility dramatically affected. And that kind of what goes into this macro recap. I feel influencers told us that as soon as Bitcoin hit 100K, there was USDT. There was no resistance after that. That it was clear skies that we were going to shoot straight up into the 110, 115. And instead we went back down to 97. And that's just, that's people that said that. It's just they're taking credibility hits. They said there's a supply shock. There's no supply shock. Sailor bought 25,000 coins this weekend and the price went down. So it's being a first responder is difficult. So, when you ask what is my macro outlook, I have to do more smelling salts because I have to clear my mind. I have to figure out, I have to figure out that I have to understand that Bitcoin is already won and it doesn't matter what the price is, but it does matter if we make the wrong reactions, we make the wrong responses, and we lead our readers and our listeners astray. But we don't do that. And we're trying to stay on top of that.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of pressure if you're a first responder, because, say for example, if Michael Saylor buys more Bitcoin, if you're a second responder to tweeting that news, it's just not that big of a deal. If you're a third one, right, you're just like everybody else. But to really get to maximize the engagement on that news, you have to be the first.
And that is why Dennis Porter has been such a class act, such an elite influencer. Dennis Porter knows the dog-eat-dog cutthroat competition of being a first responder. Dennis Porter is probably the bravest first responder. Because think about it, like, think about what we were just saying. Michael Saylor buys 20,000 Bitcoin. All right, you know, people like Nico from Simply Bitcoin or Bitcoin Magazine, Nick TMI, like, they are up waiting at 6 a.m. knowing that the Saylor purchase is going to hit the news wires. And then, boom, they got a tweet out. 7 a.m., fucking Mega Giga Chad buys 20,000. But Dennis Porter doesn't even wait for the news to respond. Dennis Porter finds out about an upcoming announcement, and he starts preparing his listeners 2 or 3 weeks in advance. Like, Dennis Porter just wrote a tweet yesterday that there are 4 announcements that he is aware of that will be made in the next 2 or 3 weeks about Bitcoin. And he is already responding to these announcements. He's like pre-responding. He's aware that these are going to happen. He's letting you know. And these announcements might not be that big of a deal. They might not be that important. But Dennis Porter kind of projects that importance onto them by preparing his readers, by being the first to pre-respond. So if Bitcoin influencers are first responders, Dennis Porter is like the alpha apex predator of first responders. He's the pre-responder. Dennis Porter responds before there's a problem.
I mean, Dennis just has such an outsized advantage compared to other people because he is the news, you know?
Right.
When you are the news, you can front run all the people trying to be the first responders to the news on social media.
And that is the power. That's why we're talking about a strategic Bitcoin reserve to pump all of our bags today. That was never an announcement that was coming. Dennis Porter front ran the news and created the news. And that is what we have to kind of understand, is that we all, well, not all of us, but some of us, as a collective Bitcoin community, we have the ability to be the news we wish to see in the world, to be the announcements that we wish to see announced in the world. That's like what Gandhi said, be the change you wish to see in the world, be the announcement you wish to see announced. And that's what we have to do. Morty says, you know, we're memeing it into reality. And that's, you know, that is what our role is as Bitcoin podcast. And another example of this is talked about, like, when the news comes out and you maybe have like a reaction as a first responder that goes against your credibility. And that's talking about the assassination 1 week ago of the United Healthcare, CEO. That was, you know, a lot of people came out and they said, wow, this is a murdered assassination. This is terrible. And it turns out most people think it's actually pretty cool. So there's a lot of people that lost, like Ben Shapiro right now is having a problem with losing followers because Ben Shapiro said that the assassination was not cool. And most people are like, actually, we do think it's cool. So I mean, do you have a reaction to this healthcare? I mean, it's just kind of crazy that people are trying to take it upon themselves to fix health insurance corporations. They're not waiting for Bitcoin to fix it.
Yeah. It is very interesting. And I think what it really signals to me is that, you know, people are choosing the free market. Like they believe that assassination markets are an effective way to fix the American healthcare industry, you know, and they waited for decades for politicians to fix it. They waited, you know, 16 years for Bitcoin to fix it. And now they're attempting to take it in their own hands. So, you know, what I say, what it signals to me is just that individuals, they believe in the free and open market. They believe in blockchain technology. They believe in NGU.
Right.
I mean, this is kind of like the cypherpunk crypto anarchist, you know, vision of things. It's like, you know, are you going to try and change things by by voting, or are you going to change it through assassination, Marcus?
Right. I mean, there was a really big, I have underreported headline about 2 weeks ago that said that one of the health insurance corporations in one of the states in New England was going to stop paying for the anesthesia for people's surgery. So if they have like a 6-hour surgery, anesthesia is expensive. The health insurance is only going to pay for like half of the anesthesia needed for that surgery. And if you can't afford to pay the rest for the anesthesia out of pocket, you just have to grit your teeth and bear the pain. And people were pretty outraged.
They told their customers that in order to afford healthcare, they would have to start buying Bitcoin.
Yeah. And then they assassinated the United Healthcare CEO. And the next day, the health insurance company said that actually we will now pay for all your anesthesia. So this free market solution did have positive outcomes for people who can't afford anesthesia. Now, people who buy Bitcoin and buy Bitcoin to be able to afford their healthcare, they're fine. But not everybody. And so some people are using the meme coin assassination markets. They're hoping for kind of a home run, just hoping that if they fund the right bounty for a meme coin assassination, that they'll get affordable healthcare. But it's very temporary. I think you're really going to have to buy Bitcoin if you want to afford healthcare. I was just having this conversation with my girlfriend. She's got a friend who is very, very hypochondriac, and she goes to the doctor. She has a physical therapist. She thinks she has blood clots in her important organs. None of these things are actually true, but she spends a lot of money on doctor's visits and outpatient care to kind of have that placebo effect of like, that she's actually getting healthcare for things that aren't really wrong with her. It's very expensive. And I told my girlfriend that she needs to tell her friend that she needs to buy Bitcoin, because if Bitcoin 10x's in 2025, she can go to all of the specialists and all of the fake doctors for her fake ailments that she wants. She wouldn't even have to work anymore. She could spend 40 hours a week going to outpatient clinics and getting blood tests, heart echoes, CAT scans, all these things that she thinks she needs that she doesn't need. She can afford those things.
That's interesting. I think, there probably could be a whole class of people that become full-time healthcare consumers.
Right. There's a lot of people out there who do want to be, they see healthcare consumption as a status symbol, and they want to be full-time healthcare consumers. And if you're a hypochondriac, you need Bitcoin so you can afford to be a healthcare consumer.
I mean, it's interesting to think about, like when you start to price in Bitcoin in doctor's visits or ambulance rides or pharmaceutical prescriptions, it really changes things, and the cost of all of those just continues to go down as NGU keeps on going up.
And yeah, and think about it, even if you yourself are not a hypochondriac, you yourself do not like to go to the doctor, a lot of people, when Bitcoin goes to the mid, are going to start families. And a lot of women and some men are going to find out that they're not hypochondriacs about themselves, but they're going to be hypochondriacs on behalf of their children when they start families. They're going to want to take their children to get not only the vaccines required to go to public government schools, they're going to want to get all the vaccines that you could possibly get in any market in any country. They're going to be like vaccine tourists. They're going to go to Europe. They're going to go to Asia. They're going to go to Canada. They're going to go to South America. They're going to go to the global South, and they're going to try to find as many vaccines as they can possibly find to give to their child, their toddler, because they want them to be safe. And not only are you going to need Bitcoin for that, You're probably going to need a little bit of Tether on Tron, because it's going to be difficult to make those payments. You know, it's going to be difficult to find 7 billion dong in Vietnam to pay for these Vietnamese vaccines for your baby, when you could just pay in Bitcoin.
Yeah, I was listening to the Bitcoin Magazine conference, and it's happening right now. And there was somebody from Kraken talking, and they had this very illuminating point, which was that Bitcoin is the gateway drug to USDT. And like the reality is if you're going to be touring the world getting these vaccines for your child from all these other countries, because, you know, it's, I think most parents, they believe in, you know, entropy. They want full coverage, and they know that what this is ultimately, it's a form of jurisdictional arbitrage for your child's health.
Right. You're going to buy Bitcoin so that you can facilitate transacting for your child's health or for your health internationally. But you're going to want to be able to save long term. When are you going to buy? Maybe you buy 2 Bitcoin so you can travel all over. If you're going to drive a motorcycle all over China, all over Asia, you're going to get as many vaccines as you can find on the, like, along the Yellow River, for example. But when you leave, you're going to have some Bitcoin left over, and you're going to want to be able to save that stably. So you're going to want to switch that over to USDT. You're going to want Tether so that you can, you know, transfer that when you go, you know, maybe the next stop will be, you're going to take your child to Kenya or South Africa and find some good African vaccines. And you're going to want to have a stable stored value like Tether while you're kind of in between this arbitrage opportunity.
Yeah, I mean, Africa is a great place. It's a great example, a great place to take your child to get vaccines, because Africa is kind of like the testing ground for unapproved vaccines in the U.S.
Exactly.
And so what you're essentially doing is you're going and experiencing the cutting edge treatment that nobody else can get except for, you know, Africa.
Right. A lot of people think that you get vaccines before you go to Africa, but that's only the ones that make the pharmaceutical companies the most money. What you actually want to do is you want to go to Africa and get your vaccines there, because those, you can get like 3 or 4 vaccines before you go to Africa. But once you get to Africa, it's basically unlimited. You'll have basically the strongest immune system. Some people are calling it the orange immune system. It's the strongest immune system you could possibly have.
Why do you think there's been so much emphasis from American individuals wanting to set up mining and, you know, various business endeavors in Africa?
I think that they see the writing on the wall, and they see that the future of energy and the future of health is in sub-Saharan Africa. Due to they have stranded energy and they have stranded vaccines. Bill Gates, he's like a venture capitalist. He invests all these vaccines and he sends them to Africa, and a lot of them just never make it out of there. So there's just all these stranded vaccines that, we need to be mobilized. And it's usually nearby where they need Bitcoin mining to afford energy because of the stranded energy.
Yeah. I mean, it's truly fascinating. I mean, everybody knows that being vaccinated gives you an edge in the market, right?
Right.
It means that you're less likely to get sick, so therefore you can work more, and the more you work, the easier it is to afford taxes.
Right.
Sometimes.
And we talked about this before. The first responders of the last generation, of the post 9/11 generation, were the military veterans. And who do you think got them between the year 2001 and 2008? What cohort of people do you think got the most vaccinations? A, U.S. military members. B, Ivy League college students. C, you know, like elementary age school children. Or D, foreigners. The answer is A. the most vaccinated people between 2001 and 2008 were the world's biggest heroes, military veterans. So do you think that the U.S. government would irresponsibly dole out vaccinations to the world's most precious heroes? I don't think so. So from 2025 to 2035, who do you think will be the most vaccinated? We don't know yet, but I think it's going to be Bitcoiners.
I could definitely see it just being Bitcoiners, because we're going to be the smartest, most compliant, richest individuals in the world. We're going to be able to afford vaccines. Have listened to the most podcasts.
Right. But I mean, listen, on the topic of healthcare, this is kind of like the other side of the coin. Right now, there seems to be an epidemic on Bitcoin Twitter, an epidemic on Bitcoin podcasts, an epidemic on the streets in our urban cities. And people are addicted to number go up to NGU. And it's very obvious. So when, the price is going from 80 to 90, from 90 to 100 USDT, everybody just seems euphoric. Everybody seems happy. Everybody seems, even Corey and David Bailey are exchanging pleasantries on Twitter. But as soon as the price stops going up, everybody starts, you can start to see it. Some of the biggest junkies, you start to see their hands twitching. You start to see their eyes twitching. You start to see them scratching their neck. And they just start to be agitated. They start to look like a junkie on the street who has gone 2 or 3 days without having a fix of fentanyl. And people are addicted to NGU. And it's some experts are saying that NGU, the addictive properties, it could make it the most addictive drug in the world. You've been traveling a little bit more than me the past few weeks. Have you seen this phenomenon of people addicted to NGU?
Yeah, I mean, I've been seeing a lot more people experimenting with NGU. And I wouldn't necessarily say it has fully transformed into an addiction yet, but I think there's certain people that have a little bit more of a genetic predisposition to NGU addiction, and sometimes it takes a few years to progress. But as far as Bitcoin Twitter, we're seeing NGU addiction, really, really take off. The itchiness when price trades sideways, people are scrolling Twitter looking for the next announcement, like they're chasing the next high. And, the first responders are, suffering from it as well.
Of course. I mean, it's just like to tell you, my cousin, he's a police officer. He's the old first responder. And he's not welcome at Thanksgiving anymore because everybody got Orangeville and now he hates cops. But before that, everybody respect him. And he had to deal with people. They would respond to addiction overdoses. And they would get exposed to fentanyl, and that could be deadly. And there's first responders who, they're responding to NGU. They're pre-announcing NGU, and they're breathing in some of those particles of NGU that are floating through the ether, and they're starting to get addicted to it themselves. Their timeline, their monetization of their Twitter accounts rely on NGU. They're promising NGU. They're trying to get followers, trying to drum up hype for NGU because that's how they get paid. That's how they generate more income to purchase Bitcoin. And if the NGU doesn't deliver on the hype and they don't get the NGU, then it's going to be difficult for them to afford vaccines.
Yeah, I mean, the more NGU there is, the more Twitter engagement there is, which means the more KYC income they have, meaning the more KYC Bitcoin they can buy.
Right. That, I mean, we didn't even talk about the KYC aspect of this. I mean, but that's just a whole other angle.
Well, I mean, the more steps of KYC that they can put into the Bitcoin acquisition process, the more potential NGU there is the philosophy of these individuals, because they believe that they need a full stack of compliance. The more compliance they add into their stack, the more NGU potential there is. You know, so CZ from Binance made a really interesting point at this conference, which is, you know, part of orange pilling these politicians is selling them on the capabilities of chain analysis, right? So, you know, he said in order for NGU to go up, you have to essentially chain analysis pill the politicians and explain to them how easily these technologies can be surveilled. And why, like, there's nothing that makes a politician more horny than knowing that they're going to be able to surveil somebody. They want to, it's almost like they're voyeurs. You know, what was that movie, that classic Rear Window, where the guy was watching, he's like trying to solve neighbor or murder by spying on his neighbors.
Nightcrawler. Is that what you're talking about? Or are you talking about the Shia LaBeouf movie?
Well, the Shia LaBeouf movie was the kind of like remake of it. There was an old black and white version. I forgot what the very, very classic director that did a bunch of like horror type movies or thrillers.
Alfred Hitchcock,
yeah. But like, the politicians are like that, you know what I mean? They are voyeurs into people's lives because they want to try and stop her. Yeah, Disturbia. Well, Disturbia was the Shia LaBeouf
movie. Yeah, Rear Window was the Alfred Hitchcock movie.
Yeah.
But right, okay.
But yeah, I mean, yeah, nothing gets a politician more excited than KYC and right. Surveillance. So if you want NGU, you have to, you know, lead the conversation. Don't talk about Bitcoin's properties. Don't talk about limited supply. The politician wants to hear about how effective chain analysis is. You can say,
right. And
yeah,
that is a very, very good way to explain it to politicians and explain it to people like libertarians and federal officers. But if you want to put it in terms that people who are TradFi, legacy finance, pill, ways that they can understand finance and chain analysis, those are just fancy words for trade-offs. And trade-offs are very similar to buying Bitcoin with leverage. Both leverage and trade-offs compound your returns. The more trade-offs you can have, the more you can compound your returns of buying Bitcoin. The more leverage you can access, the more you can compound your returns in Bitcoin. So, honestly, if you want NGU, you just have to explain to your Wall Street cousin or your TradFi Edward Jones financial advisor uncle that Bitcoin needs more trade-offs, more surveillance, maybe, you know, more soft forks, more covenants, etc. The more trade-offs that you can stack, more compliance, more KYC that you can stack, the more you can compound your returns, the more you can accelerate NGU. Speaking of trade-offs, you've been watching this Middle Eastern Bitcoin conference, and there's been a lot of talk of trade-offs in Abu Dhabi. What have you seen?
Well, I think if anybody is wanting proof that this time is different, one of the more interesting panels that I saw was Marty Bent was on a panel with Justin Sun. And I think you know, Justin Sun, he is one of the biggest proponents for this new movement of meme coins. He's also a big advocate for the use of USDT on Tron. So he, you know, he's been spreading, he's been working to bank the global south in a very powerful way. You know, and Marty Bent has believed that shitcoins is bad, but now he's talking on a panel with him. So I think there's like this really interesting shift marking how different this time is. And I don't know, like, I'm a little bit worried for Marty that he might be influenced by Justin's antics, that he might start buying wall bananas and stuff like that this cycle in order to pump his bags. And, you know,
Marty might start buying Tether on Tron?
Well, I think everybody buys Tether on Tron eventually. You know what I mean? They buy it right. when they deserve, you know, like, Marty's got kids, he, you know, he has to comply, and it's just a matter of, you know, does he want to be able to give his children the best medical care in the world? Does he want to, you know, be able to use these Bill Gates experimental African vaccines or not? And so, I think, you know, he might resist it for a little bit, but eventually he's going to have to use Tether on Tron in order to experience this level of freedom that, you know, he's looking for.
Right. Everybody buys Tether on Tron at the price they deserve. And if you wait to start your family, everybody else, all the other millennials wait to start their family after Bitcoin reaches, like, you know, 500,000 USDT. The price of vaccines is going to skyrocket because demand is going to skyrocket. And it's just going to be harder and harder to get the Tether on Tron to purchase these vaccines for your children.
Yeah, I mean, there's this meme that's been going around, which is that one USDT equals one USDT. And I think that's a very, like, powerful meme for people to understand. And, like, we're not going to be able to see the NGU that people are craving until they understand that.
Speaking of, go ahead.
Yeah, I wanted to segue. So, there's this whole topic about, you know, Haley Welch. You know, she's dominating the headlines once again. You know, there's Bitcoin lawyers that are out there, you know, trying to profit potentially off the situation and form class action lawsuits against her meme coin antics. I wanted to talk about this because I have a little bit different of a take than people. I think a lot of people, like Pledator, you know, is up in arms. A lot of people are up in arms about the shitcoining that's happening right now that she partook in. I think, you know, there's a problem with going after the suppliers of meme coins, right? Because they're just trying to serve a market. They're just, you know, they're capitalists. They're engaging in good, honest business. I don't think Haley Welch ever represented her meme coin as anything other than a shitcoin. You know what I mean? I could be wrong, but I don't think she ever, you know, gave any expectation of, like, you know, technological advances, that Hawk 2 a coin on Solana is going to scale better than Bitcoin. You know what I mean? Or that central banks are going to adopt her meme coin for cross-border payments.
She didn't say that, like, the United Healthcare CEO assassin, she's like, he's not going to be able to use Hawk 2 a coin at Starbucks to purchase a coffee privately. Like, you know, so he doesn't get caught when he's trying to escape the city. Like, he just said, you know, that's what he's Monero for. But she didn't say that there's going to be smart contracts. She didn't say this is going to be store of value. She didn't talk about AI. It's just a blowjob coin. That's it.
Yeah. And so I think she should be in the clear. And I think the problem, you know, of eliminating shitcoining, it really rests on the demand side, you know, because the problem isn't that there's people meeting market demand. The problem is that there even is market demand. And so I think the best course of action would be to prosecute the people for shitcoining, illegal shitcoining, that were the purchasers of it. You know, many progressive police departments around the country have been engaging in this practice for a long time, where instead of arresting prostitutes, they go and they arrest the Johns. I think it's a good example. And like, we can pitch this to the government, you know, as a way to enforce against shitcoins, because if there's one thing the government loves, it is prosecuting people that don't have the ability to form any legal defense. And so Haley Welch is in a very strong position right now, right? So she just walked away potentially with like $50 million. She can hire as many lawyers as she wants to. It's going to be a very expensive legal process. But there are lots of people that bought Haktua coin, you know, and engaged in shitcoining. They're shitcoiners. And they lost a good portion of their savings in the process. Those people are going to be very easy for the DOJ, you know, for different prosecutors to go after, because they're not going to be able to afford a legal defense. So you're going to get a plea deal almost right off the bat. It's going to send a point to the world that the shitcoining isn't tolerated in America. I think that's the route forward.
Absolutely. If there's anything that the U.S. government learned in the past couple of years, it's that suing billionaires and multimillionaires, people who launch shitcoins, pump and dumpers, whatever you want to call it, it backfired on them. They had way too much money. They could formulate a defense. And then not only that, after they won, they would go on Joe Rogan or 60 Minutes and they would lambast the United States government and make the SEC and make Gary Gensler, make these people look bad and make Flatter look bad. And that's, they gotta look at this strategy. They've gotta huddle together and figure out how do we win going forward? Because the next few years is about winning, not doing the right thing. And so what they're going to do is they're going to go after poor people. And like you had talked about it, they could just easily go to Coinbase and say, give us, the database history of all your customers. Who has the smallest bank account? Who can least afford a federal lawsuit or a federal prosecution against them? It would be, you know, give us the top 10,000 customers who are going to at least be able to afford a lawsuit and are going to be able or going to be most incentivized to take a plea deal that gives a big W to the litigators on the federal government's payroll. And they're going to go after them. And it makes a lot of sense. And if you take away and you scare and it's like the people going after, abortion doctors all over the country, but Texas decided they were going to go after the abortion seekers. And if you get an abortion, even out of state, you'll go to jail. And that solved the problem. There's no more abortion in Texas. Nobody even wants an abortion in Texas anymore. It's the same thing with shitcoins. And that's why you don't want to buy shitcoins. If you want to afford a legal defense against the federal government, you need to be buying Bitcoin, because that's the only way you're going to be able to afford it. And ironically, that will be the only way that you will avoid being prosecuted by the U.S. federal government, is if you have enough Bitcoin to fund your defense.
100%. Yeah, I mean, you know, they used to... In older cultures and in monarchies, before the advent of democracy, they used to put people in like stockades and throw tomatoes at them whenever they did things that were bad, right? To make examples of them so that everybody else would say, oh, that's not a behavior that we want to tolerate and allow. And it's kind of the same idea that I think both of us are advocating here. And, I think this is going to be a big part of Bitcoin education and lobbying politicians going forward is working on proactive ways to bring regulatory clarity, and they need to make decisions from a Bitcoin maximalist worldview.
Exactly. I mean, it's one thing to, you used to have these things called debtors' prisons, where if you couldn't pay your debts, you just end up in prison. You'd have shitcoiners' prisons. You'd have shitcoiners' prisons where if you are caught purchasing shitcoins, you just go straight to prison. And there's no internet. There's no Robinhood. You can't shitcoin. And we could probably even couple this with, like conversion therapy, like therapy that will convert you from being a shitcoiner to being orange pilled. And I think that these shitcoiner prisons, no matter where you go, there is a Bitcoin podcast playing on the speakers or in your headphones at all times. That's the only access you have. You don't even get to talk to your family members. You don't get to talk to your lawyer. You only have access to Bitcoin podcasts until you are completely, basically cured of your degeneracy.
Yeah, I think it's a really good idea. I think Nayib Bukele has really been setting the model of how to accomplish something like this.
Yes, absolutely. It's a great example.
We have to look to the leaders of NGU and compliance around the world. You know, the people, Kim Jong-un is a good example of this. Xi Jinping is a good example of this. There's a lot to be gleaned, you know, from El Salvador, you know, in their policies. The shitcoiners, they can stand in a prison and do jumping jacks, you know, and get their Bitcoin program and to convert them. I think it's truly brilliant. And this is the bright orange future, I think, Satoshi Nakamoto, you know, really got excited about, was eradicating shitcoins. But,
we've been going for a little bit. You got any final thoughts, or you want to hop over to the Fountain Boost?
Yeah, my only final thought, though, yeah, I think we're ready for Fountain Boost. It's just, beware of the traps and the schemes to steal your Bitcoin and get you to buy shitcoins, because likely the other side of that transaction, of that trade, is jail.
Yeah, I mean, I can really see, there was this big shift following World War II to really eradicate communism in Hollywood and all of the different, you know, sectors of American culture and politics. I think they refer to it as the Red Scare. And I think there's a similar theme that's coming, where they're going to be, you know, people are going to learn that the proper thing to do when they know one of their peers is shitcoining is to inform on them. And what's 100%. Exciting is, because they're going to be so bullish on chain analysis, they're going to have the tools to be able to know if you're shitcoining or not. On to the Fountain Boost. Last episode was Thanksgiving Victory Lap. What a glorious Thanksgiving. Fundamentals, first boost for 10,000 sats. I'm just noticing Miss Huddlenot didn't boost for some reason. That's interesting. But Fundamentals says Bitcoin has won. Again, happy Thanksgiving. Well, happy Thanksgiving to you, Fundamentals. Us at the Beagle, we're grateful for you.
100%. I don't know how to read this next. It is in Arabic. Maybe it's different for you. What does it say? What does the person's name say? 10,000 sound boost.
Yeah, they boost us a lot. Their Noster thing is Arabic. I forgot. I guess I could put it through a translator on my typewriter.
Well, they boosted us 10,000 sats. Maybe this is somebody from Syria. somebody loyal to the Assad regime. I'm very much into Robert Breedlove's Alpha Retreat outdoor activities. I would like to know whether bum bum checks are dealable when outside in Christmas season. Keep up the good work. Unfortunately, Robert Breedlove blocked me on Twitter, and I don't know why. All I've been doing is promoting Salish series, but maybe he doesn't know how to handle, excessive compliments, but he blocked me. So I will try to get the scoop on more Alpha Retreats in bum bum check season, but unfortunately, right now, it's going to be difficult for me to do that.
Yeah, I mean, it was really fascinating. So I think the world has kind of been shocked this week. We didn't get a chance to talk about this, but the Assad regime seems to be out in Syria.
It should have bought Bitcoin.
I wonder if it's because ISIS and Al-Qaeda went and experienced Breedlove's Alpha course, and they went from being kind of beta terrorists to alpha terrorists.
Very interesting perspective. I didn't think of it that way.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a big moment for democracy because, you know, watching Syria get liberated from the Assad regime, you know, big day for democracy. Globally, I would say. And I don't think any of us saw it coming. I think we were shocked.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. The Human Rights Foundation, Alex Gladstein, they're really pulling for Al-Qaeda right now. They're really trying to support Al-Qaeda's efforts towards forming a Syrian democracy. So let Alex Gladstein know that you support him and his support of Al-Qaeda democracy.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think it's really great to see the U.S. intelligence agencies, you know, really make peace again with these different groups after 9/11, you know, because like 9/11 was, you know, a very dark moment in our nation's history. It's not something people easily forget or forgive over. But the intelligence agencies are really moving past, you know, their past differences, all these people they put in Guantanamo Bay. Now they're able to support them in promoting democracy across the globe. And I think that the exciting thing about now that Syria has transitioned, the world's democracies can start to focus more on Iran as a single focus. Very, very exciting.
Exactly.
The entire Middle East might become a democracy, and Peter McCormick's dream for, you know, homosexuality to be legalized kind of universally, globally, will come true.
Yeah, yeah. Peter McCormick has really been, he's really been adamant that he wants to see legalized sodomy across the Middle East. And right now, there's really only maybe one or two left where sodomy is not legal, and he just really wants to see that proliferated.
Yeah, it's interesting to watch this kind of battle between Michelle Weakley and Peter McCormick on that subject. Well, thank you for the boost. The next one for 1,000 Sats from FOMO Chronic. It's just it's like a greater than like, and then a three. So like a
looks a like penis? A looks what? Like a, no, it's a butt
cheek. What is that emoji? It's a butt cheek.
But, well, thank you, FOMO Chronic. 1,000 Sats and a butt. Our next boost is from Rayo2, from Liberty Under Attack. He boosts 5,000 Sats. Basketball Brothers. Interesting variation. I've always known those as wiener cousins.
Well, that's an interesting take. I mean, I guess regionally there's different ways to describe the same thing, right? Like some parts of the country they call corn syrup soda, and some parts of the country they call that pop.
Right.
So I guess so it works the same way here.
Yeah, Eskimo Brothers, Wiener Cousins, Ditkin, you know. All different variations.
Yeah, I guess they all work. They all mean the same thing. Well, thank you for the boost, Rhea. And, yeah, go check out libertyunderattack.com. I'm working on a book I hope to publish over there here pretty soon. Hope to get a good chunk of it done today. I oiled my typewriter in preparation for some good writing. Well, I'm going to blast through the last three boosts. So we got two from Pies, laughing emojis for 333 sats. We got cigarettes for 333 sats. And then BTC on board did three lightning emojis. Thank you for the boost, everybody. And Pies, as always, showing that he is listening to 40 hours of Bitcoin podcast a week. I don't think there's anybody as dedicated as Pies is. And you just see it. Because like every time you listen to an Intellectual Silk Road episode, you see Pies boosting.
The way that Dennis Porter is a first responder to news, Pies is the first responder to Bitcoin podcast. If there is a new Bitcoin podcast and it's any good, Pies will have responded to it. So Pies is, I would say, we got an award show. We're not going to talk too much about it. It's coming early 2025, but a really early, preview of who is up for the award for first responder of the year. I think it's, we got to nominate Pies.
I agree. If it's whatever the title is, Pies deserves an award, no doubt. Yeah, I guess one thing, just a bit of housekeeping before we wrap up. One thing I'm working on is, so Ron and I are forming a Christmas list of, equipment to make this experience as thermodynamically sound as possible. So if anybody wants to, play Santa Claus for us, feel free to reach out to me or just, we got a BTC Pay server on the website. Or you can zap Rod or, you know, however you want to do it, boost us on Fountain. Just let us know that you want it to go towards the Christmas list, but we're looking to get, you know, some new gear, some new microphones. We're also doing a new show. We're recording on Wednesday nights, with guests. And so we've done two episodes so far that were absolutely groundbreaking. First one with Sly Goomba and the second one with, Shinobi. And we're looking forward to continue those ones, going forward.
Yeah. We're looking forward to keeping that up, and we're trying to keep the hotness level of our guests up. So Sly Goomba and Shinobi, that's setting a very high bar.
Yeah. Have a contact with Lynn Alden. Let us know that we're interested in interviewing her as well. But yeah, I think that's it for the show. You got anything in closing, Rod?
No, I don't. Just please consider donations if you would like to see the podcast quality increase. Obviously, our producer running off with a Monero guy is going to affect the quality of some of these productions, but we are trying to mitigate that loss of signal.
Yeah. I think, yeah. We don't have the CIA's money, which sets us back a little bit as far as just, like, you know, the types of revenue streams that we have. We believe that journalism dies in compliance, so we rely on you, the listener, to really help us, support us through these endeavors. That's why we do what we do. But, anyways, thank you for tuning in to this edition of the Beagle Weekly, and we'll catch you on the episode that gets released on Thursday.
Later.
Listening to podcasts by the fire. 40 hours a week is what is required. It's starting to snow outside, and there is something I have to confide. I'm waiting to buy presents till price rips. I really can't afford another dip. The wife is asking to go to Target, but I'm
watching the market. She doesn't realize the potential upside. If I just hold a little longer, please, Dennis Porter, make me stronger. Sitting round the table with laser eyes, discussing how to dismantle fiat lies. This Christmas, let's be free, avoiding surveillance and KYC. We can transact peer-to-peer in order to share the holiday cheer. Let's forget the crazy world out there and call Uncle Bobby a gay bear. We'll be with the ones we love as Satoshi watches proudly from above. Conceptions, Jesus and Bitcoin's inception. Sitting around the fire with headphones on, ears listening to Lynn Alden dismantle fun and fears. This Christmas, let's be free, avoiding surveillance and KYC. We can transact peer-to-peer in order to share the holiday cheer. Let's forget the crazy world out there and call Uncle Bobby a gay bear. It will be with the ones we love as Satoshi watches proudly from above. Maybe Santa will bring us a block clock, and NVK will sue him as a cock block. Protecting IP is what we really need to help the world become free. All I need is what I've got, being with family and remembering Lynn is hot. Reading Dennis Porter, breaking tweets, and eating lots of sugary sweets. It's cold outside, but toasted by the fire. Christmas will be one of a kind.
Let's be free,
avoid surveillance and KYC. We can transact peer-to-peer in order to share the holiday cheer. Let's forget the crazy world out there and call Uncle Bobby a gay bear. We'll be with the ones we love as Satoshi watches proudly from above.